The county, as I said, is one of the four that have been trialling Clare's Law for the past 6 months. In fact, 6 months today. The law was named after Clare Wood. Clare died at the hands of her violent ex-partner. Clare thought he had a criminal record for motoring offences, but actually he'd been in prison for 3 years for harassing a woman, and earlier for 6 months after breaching a restraining order. The law allows police to reveal details of accusations of abuse, as I say, even if they haven't been proven. Now, the Prime Minister, David Cameron, made comments in the Commons after the Devizes Tory MP, Claire Perry, raised the issue with him. Just have a listen to what Claire Perry had to say.
Last year, more than 100 women were killed by men in the United Kingdom. And we know that domestic violence happens across behind doorways across this entire country. Will the Prime Minister take the opportunity of International Women's Day to pay tribute to the outstanding work being done by Wiltshire Police in trialling new ways of reducing this appalling crime, and also to the Victim Support Centre in Devizes, who are providing services for those who suffer in my constituency?
It's Claire Perry talking in the Commons, and the Prime Minister was happy to agree.
I particularly want to commend not just the police in Wiltshire, but actually the local authority that has done very good work at bringing all the agencies together to make sure we really have a joined-up approach of trying to crack this very difficult problem, which actually, as she says, has often been hidden from view.
Well, this year alone, Wiltshire Police have had 30 applications. A third of people were given the information that they asked for. The aim of this trial is to help people like Lucy. By the way, that's not her real name. From South Wiltshire, BBC Wiltshire's Karen Gardner went to meet her and asked her how her relationship began.
The relationship evolved when I was least expecting it. I'd actually come out from previous relationships with a view of never getting involved with another man. I was charmed and he caught me literally on the hop. He seemed a nice man. I was very wary and I was going quite slowly, I thought, at the time. Everything was very, very charming. He was charming. I met his family. It was all very, very quick. And when I look back on it now, the speed was the essence.
He ticked all the boxes that you could ask of a man for a normal, healthy woman who wants to be in a relationship with normal desires.
Absolutely. The kids loved him. You know, it was just magic.
Now, you married him quite quickly, didn't you?
I did.
How quickly?
It's probably within about 3 months, or just under the 3 months. The actual wedding planning, again, was very, very quick.
When did you start to realise that this wasn't exactly what you'd signed up for?
It was literally the following day when we'd actually gone abroad on our honeymoon, and then something just snapped. And I put it down at first to perhaps the heat. You know, he was tired, we were travelling abroad. But it just seemed completely out of character for the person that I'd actually seen. And I suddenly saw another man. It wasn't him. I didn't recognise. There was anger. I was frightened to the point where I literally barricaded myself into a little room.
Lucy, just give us an insight into the day you had in those last couple of years with your ex-husband.
I think time was a factor for him. It was almost an addictive pattern. So everything was controlled down to such precision. So from the moment we woke up, which would be 5:30, it would be a question of you know, having to go down and prepare carrot juice, for instance. Literally, from the moment he was actually sitting in the car, I would be given lots of texts, giving me instructions of what I had to do. You know, the whole day would be mapped out for me.
But you also had two children and you were working.
Yes.
So your day was pretty busy anyway, but he had very specific requirements about what you did with your time.
Yep.
And there were signs that this was very controlling. For example, the time he'd say he'd want his supper.
Yeah, it wouldn't be 6 o'clock, it would be 6:04. It would be perhaps a way of, I could cook the dinner one day, it would be perfect, another day it wouldn't be perfect, it'd be cooked exactly the same way. So I never knew where I was. I was walking on eggshells, literally, you know, from the moment he actually came from work, the youngest one would be looking out the window like a meerkat, and we'd all be waiting, wondering what kind of mood was going to actually be greeting. Sometimes it could be a nice mood, we could be having a happy time around the dinner table, and then just suddenly, boom, it could be one look or one comment or something, and then the whole mood changes again.
How long did the abuse go on?
When I'm looking back, the abuse actually started straight away, really. So for the 3 years that we were actually together, it was a very slow process of grooming, I guess. It built up to intimidation in my face, putting me down, making me feel really small, very controlling.
But it didn't resolve into physical abuse?
It didn't resolve into physical. It got very, very close to it.
You got yourself out of the relationship. Do you think if you'd stayed in it, it would have got worse? You would have been physically abused?
Definitely, because my confidence had gone. My friends afterwards have told me how different I became. And I just lost the shadow. I became a shadow of who I was. I was a larger-than-life character, and I was this timid little person that, you know, was just treading on eggshells all the time.
You don't look like a victim, Lucy. You know, you look confident, you're a very attractive woman, you're nicely dressed, you hold your head up, you speak well. You were also aware of the potential abuse because you'd had previous abusive relationships.
But I didn't recognise that it was abuse. And it actually took one of the managers from the Women's Refuge. She recognised certain signs. I can recognise certain signs in women now with the work that I do. If someone is abused, even in the crowd, I can spot it. But I didn't recognise it at the time because I was too, you know, I wasn't educated enough to understand what abuse was. It was just a way of life.
Brave lady telling her story there too, BBC Wiltshire's Karen Gardner. Well, coming up on the programme, I'm going to be talking to PC Pete Clark from Wiltshire Police's Domestic Violence Unit based in Melksham. Pete is the man responsible for Wiltshire's Clare's Law pilot, so lots of questions to ask him. He'll be joining me very soon here on The Morning Show at BBC Wiltshire.
From 12, on BBC Wiltshire.
We're talking about domestic violence on the programme this morning because it is 6 months since the trial of Clare's Law began here in Wiltshire. So are you looking for a new relationship at the moment? Maybe you're actively dating. Are you using online dating perhaps to try and meet somebody? Lots of things to consider before you get into a relationship. But I wonder how many people actually question whether their new partner, be it a man or a woman, need to be said, could potentially abuse you, both physically or mentally in the future. I have to say, it's probably not at the forefront of your mind asking that question when you're in the throes of a new relationship. It's exciting times, isn't it? Well, we heard earlier from Lucy, who did suffer domestic abuse. Wiltshire Police, as I say, have been trialling Clare's Law to track down on the problem of domestic violence. The law allows police to reveal details of accusations of abuse, even if they weren't proven. The Police and Crime Commissioner, Angus McPherson, told BBC Wiltshire's Ben Prater on our breakfast show this morning that more women still need to know about the scheme.
It's not that well known, and I think part of what we'd like to do is to make more people aware of this. Certainly I was with a group of victims of domestic violence and abuse the other day. They had been through the system, so it might not have applied to them at the time they were being abused, but they weren't fully aware of the availability of this.
Do you have any reservations, though? Does it need tweaking?
Obviously, this is a trial. I suppose the issue for us at the moment is to whether we should continue to run this in Wiltshire while that evaluation is being done. It would be a great shame to start something, stop it, and then start it again if we find it's not working. Victims, domestic abuse, fairly high on my priority list. The Police and Crime Plan's out for consultation. I think we can sustain this. I think I'd like to hear from people whether they think it is worth sustaining or something that is valuable to them. But it's so new that so few people know about it.
Well, that's Angus McPherson speaking to Ben Prater earlier on our breakfast show. Let's welcome to the programme now PC Pete Clark from Wiltshire Police's Domestic Violence Unit in Melksham and indeed the man responsible for Wiltshire's Clare's Law pilot. Morning, Pete.
Good morning, Graham. Thank you for having me on the programme.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's nice to see you in here. Interesting listening to Angus McPherson there. Let's go straight to that question. Do you think enough people know about Clare's Law and about what it can do to help them?
Well, certainly at the launch, there was a considerable amount of publicity on national press and media, and I did expect at the start there to be a deluge of applications, but nationally, having spoken with colleagues, there wasn't, which did surprise me. But what we have seen is since the inception of it is a gradual pickup where it's become steady, but I would like to see more because it's available. It's so simple to do, and I feel it's a really useful tool.
We're going to find out exactly how it works. If people listening to the lady we called Lucy earlier, as I said, felt, yeah, we can relate to this, What help is there? We'll find out. We'll come on and find out exactly how it works, what the process is, if you like, very soon. First of all, I want just to take it back to the beginning. Just remind us how Wiltshire got chosen to be one of the four counties that were used for this trial of Clare's Law.
Well, the previous Chief Constable, Mr Brian Moore, was in fact the ACPO, that's the Association of Chief Police Officers. He was the ACPO head for domestic violence. That means, in effect, he was the national lead. So, of course, he had an interest in this. And Wiltshire being his home force, he thought we could trial it. And I'm glad he did that because, you know, it's obviously a subject close to his heart and I'm pleased to be doing it.
Is Wiltshire a place where there are high levels of domestic abuse?
Wiltshire is a very safe county and is no worse than any other place in the United Kingdom, and probably I would say that Wiltshire is one of the lowest places that has domestic violence throughout the UK.
Okay. Let's get on with how it works. If somebody listening to our conversation this morning does think that they're in an abusive situation, be it physical or mentally, what can they do? What's the process?
The process is so simple, it's unbelievable, that there are various ways that they can contact the police. And the easiest way is to just pop into one of our police stations. It can be Swindon, Salisbury, Melksham or Chippenham, into the inquiry office, and go in and say, I would like to make a Clare's Law, or as we would refer to it, a domestic violence disclosure scheme application. They fill out a few forms at the desk. That can be done in private, because obviously the nature of it could be quite sensitive. And then the process starts. Otherwise, they can approach an officer or a police community support officer in the street and make that request. They can also do it on the telephone. So they simply have to pick up our force contact centre, make that application. It would take about 10 minutes for the application to be completed. It then comes into the system and ultimately comes to me and I will process it. It can also actually be done online.
I would imagine it's going to take an awful lot for someone, though, to get to that stage, to actually have to think in their mind, OK, I've got to pick up the phone and talk to the police or walk through the doors of a police station. That's something that no one's going to do lightly.
No, it takes a huge amount of courage. And I think what people must realise with domestic victims is that they may have been subject for various types of abuse over a very long period of time. They probably have been subject of extensive grooming and conditioning, and it would take a huge amount of courage to actually walk through the doors of a police station and say, I want to do this.
Mm. Particularly if they're feeling like they've got low self-esteem.
Yes, that's a common trait. Sadly, with many domestic victims, they have low self-esteem. The perpetrator will often have belittled them for an extended period of time, and quite often victims will sadly feel that it's actually their fault that they are suffering this abuse. So to actually overcome those barriers and start the process, it takes a considerable amount of courage, yes.
So words of reassurance for people that are getting to the stage where they do feel strong enough to ask for some help about once they've made that step, and that's the biggest thing, I suppose, making that initial step to saying, I need some help. How are they going to be treated?
The minute the application starts, that there's a considerable package that goes with it. There are time parameters for the various stages, and throughout that whole process, I'm in constant contact with them, as can be support agencies if they need to be. Each case is dealt with on a case-by-case basis. So effectively what I'm doing is risk assessing, taking into account the needs of the person, looking at all those exterior factors. So part of it is this massive thing about managing the risk, safeguarding the other two sort of founding principles that we base it on. So, you know, I have to remain in constant contact. There are various measures that we can put in place, you know, if things escalate. So, you know, that's a whole complete package of aftercare and care whilst the application continues.
Now, we mustn't forget that at the moment, Clare's Law is a trial. We're 6 months into the trial. As with any trial, you have to have some sort of measure of success to see whether or not this is something that can be introduced full time. How do you measure success of something like this?
Well, an easy one would be the obvious one. How many applications have we had? And then you'd have to look at breaking that down into how many people we actually disclosed to, and then as a result of disclosure, what they did in regards to the relationship. But for me, it's the invisible factor. It's that thing that you can't quantify. It's prevention. And prevention is the name of the game. And what we're looking at is if we give a correct disclosure to a person, we are not looking in the future that they would perhaps be a victim of an assault or being involved in an abusive relationship down the line. 4-6 months, it's preventative. Very difficult to actually put onto a graph and measure.
Yeah.
But it's an invisible factor. But, you know, I know it's there. And you know, you can't really sort of graph that, but it's definitely there.
So in the last 6 months, what's the take-up been? Have many people got in contact and said, I need some help? Can I exercise Clare's Law?
The exact figures for Wiltshire, I mean, there's two routes that you can go into this. There's the straightforward where you can walk into a police station and say, I would like to make an application. But there's also what's called the third-party route, and this is known as the right to know. And this is where a third party, such as a relative, a friend or an outside agency, can make an indirect approach to the police and say, I am concerned about this particular circumstances. A couple of classic examples have been a mother with her adult daughter. Daughter is in a what appeared to be an abusive relationship. The mother made a right to know application. We processed that and there were some concerns.
Now, you see, this is something, again, that I have to say I didn't know. I didn't know there was a third person right to this as well. So anyone listening today that's concerned about a family member or a friend, they equally have the rights to Clare's Law.
Absolutely. They have the right to walk in and make that application. But I must point out that although they have the right to ask at that point, the person the information concerns is the potential victim.
Yes,
so having made that initial application, the mother or father, whatever, whoever it happened to be, that they would not necessarily be given that information. But also outside agencies. And that's one thing Wiltshire Police are actively looking to do. And in fact, we've got some training sessions coming up soon with partner agencies, because partnerships is the name of the game. It is the way forward. So people like housing officers, social services, they can make applications to the police if they're dealing with people and they feel someone that they're dealing with is at risk, and we will process those through as well. And the person who's subject to that inquiry will not know that we're doing this.
Yeah. Going back to the trial of Clare's Law, how long is the trial, by the way?
The trial is 12 months.
OK, so you've got another 6 months to go.
6 months.
How are you going to prove to the government that it has made a difference in order to keep Clare's Law going and it being available to people?
Well, obviously, we would look at comparative figures for domestic violence results within Wiltshire. Perhaps a before and after comparison would be the obvious one. I'm in quite regular contact with the Home Office about this. We talk about it. We talk about the invisible effect. And I say it is difficult to quantify, you know, in a straightforward before and after scenario. It would be a question of perhaps the figures, the number of applicants actually coming through the doors asking for disclosure.
Because this could be a problem, couldn't it, really? Because, you know, we keep talking about the invisible effect, and it's invisible, and yet you've got to try and convince the government that it's made a difference. How do you do that when it's invisible?
Persuasion. I mean, again, it will be down to those figures. We would look at, you know, before and after. We would look at perhaps some of the perpetrators involved, because what you've got to understand with domestic violence perpetrators, they're normally serial. That means, under the definition, they have been abusive or violent to two or more previous partners. Some, in fact, have been abusive to dozens over a long period of time. So we might be able to look at an actual quantitative figure in terms of, you know, they're not able to abuse identified victims because the victims have chosen to discontinue that relationship. So
I got a couple more questions that I want to ask you. Let's go back to someone making that first step to actually coming in and saying, I want some help, I want to exercise Clare's Law. You make your inquiries, you then perhaps have to go back to that person and say, the news isn't great. Your husband, boyfriend, wife, girlfriend, whatever it may be, actually has got a history of violent domestic abuse. What then? You give them this news. You can't then just send them off back out. What happens then?
Of course not. There's an extensive aftercare package. When I carry out disclosures, I'm always accompanied by an independent domestic violence advisor who will be talking later, Jennifer from Victim Support, and we're able to offer sort of aftercare packages. Now, they can start with, the starting point is, once you give someone information, you then have to manage the risk from that point on. And potentially, having given disclosure, that could be the riskiest time.
Yeah, of course.
So I have to consider, will the perpetrator find out about this disclosure? If the victim leaves him, how will he react? So some of the measures that we can put in, just the basic one, is regular contact from the police. That can be by phone call. We could increase that by actually uniform visits. We can put operational orders on response orders on their premises. We can put we can give them police alarms. And in fact, the ultimate one is we could remove them from the scenario if the risk was so great. We could offer them refuge. So there is a considerable aftercare, and that will go on for many weeks after. Mm. And I will constantly throughout risk assess every day, literally, until, you know, we get to a point where we feel the situation is managed and calmed down. So,
and I suppose whatever the person decides to do with the information that you've given to them, they therefore then are in contact with you. So they can keep in contact with you. They know how to contact you, and you and your team can contact them. Make sure they're okay.
Absolutely. I mean, I contact people regularly, as does Jennifer, via victim support.
Who we're going to meet shortly.
Yes, yeah. They've got my phone number. You know, we can do follow-up visits. You know, it's basically tailored on a case-by-case basis because each one is different. But I'd certainly like to assure anybody contemplating an application, you know, we don't just forget about you. That aftercare is there, and if necessary, will continue for months, you know, on a constant risk assessment basis.
OK, I'm really grateful for you coming in today and for explaining this. Important, just before we say thank you to you, once again, how do people get in touch? How do people ask for this this help?
Three very, very simple steps. Take yourself in person into a police station, and in Wiltshire, it will be Swindon, Salisbury, Melksham or Chippenham. Or you can phone the 101 number, you'll get through to our force contact centre, and you can say, I would like to make a Clare's Law application. Thirdly, you can approach any uniform officer in the street or a police community support officer and say, I would like to make a Clare's Law application. That will initiate the process, and from then on it will take its course, and I'll be in touch.
Pete, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good to see you. PC Pete Clark from Wiltshire Police's Domestic Violence Unit based in Melksham. It's 20 to 11.
Travel. BBC Wiltshire.
It's David Bowie and Starman. He's got a brand new album to be released later on this month. Highly anticipated. It's just gone a quarter to 11. It is BBC Wiltshire. This is Graham Rogers with you. Organisations in the county, including the police and the council, are working together to crack down on cases of domestic violence, as we've been talking about. Now, Home Office statistics report that domestic violence accounts for 15% of all violent incidents. In the year 2010 to 2011, 21 men and 93 women were killed by a partner, ex-partner or lover. Wiltshire Police, as we've heard, have been a part of a trial of Clare's Law for the past 6 months, which allows women to find out whether or not their partners have a violent past. And one of the organisations working closely with the police is Victim Support. And delighted to say, joining me in the studio now is Jennifer Cironi, Senior Independent Domestic Violence Advisor. That's quite some title, isn't it? Goodness. With Victim Support in Devizes. Welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Graham. Delighted to be here today.
It's nice to see you. How much of your time as somebody employed by Victim Support is taken up with cases of domestic violence?
Well, you've alluded to my job title, which is Independent Domestic Violence Advisor. So my role is to work full time, assisting those to be at the highest risk of serious harm. As an organisation, Victim Support supports many different victims of crime. And you spoke about the figure previously, about 15% of recorded crime is domestic violence and abuse. And that would, again, reflect the percentage of our time which is spent dealing with victims of this very difficult and sensitive problem.
Now, obviously, you work very closely with the police, but within the past 6 months, how much involvement have you had with this trial of Clare's Law?
We've been very, very much involved in this. I think one of the strengths that we have in Wiltshire, we have extremely good and sophisticated multi-agency working. We work very closely together. Domestic abuse is a very complex and difficult problem, and not one agency has all of the answers to such a question, nor does it have the resources to deal with it. It's only by working together that we're really able to provide a really effective solution to this very difficult problem. Mm-hmm. So agencies such as Victim Support and the IDVA service do work very closely with the police. Our role really is to assist with that assessment of risk, to identify what those risks are and how best we can manage that person, those risks, in order to keep that person and their children safe.
Mm. One of the things that I learnt, one of the many things that I've learnt this hour talking to you all, was the third party inquiry. So if there is a mother listening or a father or a best friend listening that is concerned that their son, daughter, best friend is in a domestic abuse situation, they can also ask to exercise Clare's Law. How many people do you think know about that? Because I didn't know about that.
No, and I think that's a very good outcome of us being here today. Yes, and certainly this third-party route also applies to other professionals as well who are coming into contact with potential victims of domestic abuse.
So professionals such as people like doctors or teachers, I suppose.
Indeed. Workers in the healthcare sector, for example, midwives, health visitors, those are our eyes and our ears on the ground. And they're very, a lot of professionals will tell you of their previous frustrations. They've worked with and they've known about people who are a problem towards their partners. And it's one of the frustrations that as a professional, if you see that perpetrator of domestic abuse turning up with a new partner, how do we deal with that information? The third party reporting route actually has gives us that opportunity for a professional to actually voice those concerns and for that application process to commence.
Can you give me an example of this sort of in practice, if you like?
Well, an example perhaps could be a midwife. They perhaps dealt with a pregnancy. We do know, unfortunately, that a lot of domestic abuse can actually start or escalate during pregnancy. So midwives are very, very important colleagues in helping us to address this problem.
Why would that be, just out of interest?
There are lots and lots of theories about it. One of my favourite theories is that people who are abusive to their partners, what they want is absolute control and domination over every aspect of that victim's life. We heard from the very powerful and eloquent account of Lucy earlier. Yes. And we heard about having to have the dinner on the table at four minutes past six in the evening, and how she feared the consequences of not having the dinner on the table at that time. That is the level to which people who are abusive towards their partners will go to. Mm. Now, in pregnancy, that dynamic shifts. That pregnant woman has now a different focus of attention. That focus away from the perpetrator, servicing their needs, trying to pacify how they feel and they behave, that focus has now shifted. Also, pregnancy offers an opportunity for more people to be intrusive and to actually be involved and be in contact with the victim. And that changes the power dynamic with a perpetrator. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the theories that I have about why domestic abuse can escalate and start within pregnancy.
Okay. Direct question here. As working with Victim Support, have you noticed a difference since the introduction of the trial of Clare's Law?
Yes. One of the unfortunate consequences being a victim of domestic abuse is that you become very isolated and very disempowered. This is a really useful tool in our toolkit, which is offers us a multiple variety of options to actually empower people to actually make decisions for themselves. And I think that's a very powerful thing. By giving people information about risk, that gives them the opportunity to make informed decisions, which they can use to inform about their own risk and that of their children.
Do you think it should be made permanent? Do you think Clare's Law should be rolled out across the whole country?
It's very difficult to quantify success for the reasons my colleague PC Clark has already spoken about this morning. However, I do think that prevention is always very hard to measure.